A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
All right, talking a little bit of the graps here. Rick Morris, Kyle Ross, getting back into this again. Starting, let's say, in a familiar place here, hipsterism, but this time as it relates to pro wrestling. Some of these takes that I'm seeing in various places.
Well, can we just clarify something right here?
Yes.
I have no idea what you're going to bring up to me right now.
Okay.
You just basically, I just want to let everyone know who's listening to this particular podcast understand that you told me you want to talk wrestling with me, and I have no idea what you're going to say.
This is the confluence.
There has been no pre-meeting about this, whereas the NFL stuff we talked a little before. I have no idea what you're going to mention to me right now.
Two of our favorite areas to discuss here, a confluence. This is a good starting point, I figured. Hipsterism and pro wrestling, because you and I both, by our own admission, are real smart mark type people here as far as our enjoyment of the pro graps and everything. But there are people that are a lot more smart markish and a lot more precious than you and I. At some of the boards that I like reading, whether
by
it be
smart marks, you mean dumb marks, really?
Well,
because
people who get hipsters, people who are overthinking this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Some of the folks that, and as much as I enjoy reading on a regular basis, I'm going to say pro wrestling only and Death Valley Driver. That is a place where you're going to find some real hipsterism on there. And one of the things that I thought of, I did mention to you briefly off air. Best workers of the 90s, they were going through and they were doing this, and it seemed to be kind of a consensus in the thread here. Best workers of the 90s seemed to be a consensus among a lot of them. Bret Hart,
yes.
Shawn Michaels,
yes.
A lot of them were giving a lot of credence to Steve Austin based on the early WCW work plus what he did later on.
Right.
There were some great matches.
Oh, yeah, he was great. He was always good. People, I always hated, you talk about a hipster take, I knew he was going to be the greatest from the beginning. He never would have been what he was without being, getting the famous FedEx package from Mr. Bischoff.
True, true. Well, what's the fun? I always tell the story about him. I mean, I did buy into his greatness, basically like from the After Mags, but it was a thing where my brother was home from college when he and I were much younger. He was home from college, I think it was spring break. And we had on Saturday night, and it was back in the day. And my brother's like, who's this guy? He's like, I'm like, dude, you're wrong. That guy is going to be the next Ric Flair. And that's what I was saying at the time.
Really?
He's going to be the next Ric Flair.
Now, I know there were some early 90s observers where Meltzer compared him to Flair.
Yeah.
I don't think
he always had the charisma. I mean, he was a work in progress.
He was like a top five guy in North America early night as Stunning Steve. He was never going to be without the FedEx package, without getting 86. But he would never have been the transcendent star that he was.
No,
he would have always just been a very, like even Ric Flair is transcendent, but, not to the degree that Steve Austin was.
Well, Austin always had it in him. But you're right that it took that for it to, but
the whole Stone Cold character is basically a reaction to being 86.
It is.
It's a guy who was very good and was fired from his job and basically became a drunk who, needed, he embraced that. I mean, he did, but I mean, he told a famous story. He was in his pickup truck drinking when Paul Heyman gave him a call and was like, hey, you want to just come and rant about WCW on my show?
Yeah. But I just always laugh because in a sense I called it, but I couldn't have been further off. I was buying that when I said Ric Flair, I meant that the Stunning Steve thing was going to take off and become big time. He became essentially the next Hogan, albeit a Hogan for these times, kind of a Hogan, for the anti-authority times that we lived in. But it just I got it really wrong in that way as far as what kind of guy.
He was brought in to be the top heel. He was brought in 1996. I mean, Jim Ross said we brought him in to be the top heel in the company.
I've read different stuff that they brought in. He was brought in to be a mechanic, a hand, a good worker, an upper mid-card heel.
Well, that's probably whatever. Jim Ross might be blowing smoke, but I've seen him. JR felt that way. He was one of the key three acquisitions that JR brought earlier in 96 with Foley and Pillman.
True. Well, as far as Austin's place on that list, though, that's where it starts to sidetrack from there because there are other names on the list. There are some real hipster-type names.
Again, if anyone thinks those aren't the top three, you're dumb.
No, I think that's right. But this is where I want to get to your point, though, because there are other...
I had a point?
Well, I'm taking that this as being your point combined with what you've said to me off-air because we're talking about, theoretically, best workers, okay? that's we're talking snowflake stuff, we're talking whatever. But in putting these three guys at the top of the pyramid, you're saying you're defining great workers as success and work rate. You're putting the two of them together here as opposed to just being snowflakes guys.
Because, I think those are the three top snowflakes guys of the 90s.
Well, how about the Canadian Voldemort? I mean, that's, you know, there's...
Well, it depends. I mean, if you, yeah, if you start doing things like including Japan and his various, you know, tours ever. But those guys had more snowflakes in the 90s than Benoit.
But they were
doing it more. If you rank,
they were doing it in important matches, though. That's the thing. They were doing it in big matches.
Well,
you seem to be getting extra credence.
It's easier.
Yeah.
And this is where I'm not a hipster at all. And where
okay.
I'm not, it is easier to get snowflakes
okay.
in a bigger match.
Okay.
And, I mean, you have to be damn good to get a lot of snowflakes out of a match that no one really cares about. You have to work harder in a lower card match to get a four-star
right.
match than you do in a main event.
Well, this is what we're coming to, at least on my initial
you're going to get better
thing.
Booking.
No, that's true. That's true. But you kind of scoffed when I brought this up to you off air.
Wait,
one
we didn't
of
do any work. I have
list,
no idea what you're going to say. What are you talking
well,
about?
Well, this was a conversation from a few days ago.
Okay.
Tracy Smothers is on the
yes.
list for any number of people. Now you remember me telling you that. Now, Tracy Smothers is one of the top workers of the 90s in looking at, look at the stuff that he did in Smoky Mountain. Look at this great stuff in ECW. And it was pointed out on some of these boards that in ECW, they not only did the comedy heel stuff that people remember, there were matches where they played actual heels that were scary. Now, I don't remember hardly any of these matches. I remember the comedy heel stuff, but there were matches they supposedly worked against Nova and Chetty and a couple of these guys where they worked as, like, badass heels, and he worked as, like, the Southern Stretcher and that kind of stuff, and he worked in different ways. I know that you're always big on touting Midnight Express Southern Boys from the Bash in 1990, I believe. So he did have some moments in there. But clearly, you're from the school of thought that he didn't work enough big matches to be one of the top workers of the 90s.
Here's what people have to understand.
Yeah.
Just because you are a reliable hand and very good does not make you one of the top workers of any particular time period.
Okay.
Because if you are eventually, and now I say that, you know, the era they're in currently now, I think the glass ceiling has been more in full effect than any other era previously.
Mm-hmm.
But he was kind of, yes, okay, he was, Tracy Smothers is a good worker.
Right.
Is he, I don't like the term, I've really come to loathe the terms in any walk of life,
mm-hmm.
underrated and overrated.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I like to find things that are just properly rated. Peyton Hillis is properly rated, by the way.
Okay.
Okay, people, you know, too many people have him brought. There's too many people who think he's better than he is. There's too many people who think he's worse than he is. He's actually properly rated.
He's a number two fantasy running back.
Yes, exactly,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. Tracy Smothers, to me, is a guy who I guess is technically underrated in the sense that, yes, he was a good worker that never got a big spot.
Right.
But Trace, like, I mean, really, in a major company, I mean, you know, obviously WWE never, I mean, Freddie Joe Floyd or whatever, you know,
right.
was stupid. And because
pathetic
he's a,
gimmick.
Yeah, and because he's a Southern guy, he had no chance in that company.
Right.
But he was around for WWE. I mean, really, I mean, do you see him as a, you know, he's the kind of guy who you put in there with a green person to make them look good.
Right.
Or if you just want, if like a top guy wants to have just kind of like a good throwaway match, you put him in there. But that doesn't mean he's one. Like, to me, there is no way, there's no criterion where he could be considered a top 10 worker of the 1990s.
No, but I did say to you off air, and I'll hold to this.
It's like Terry Taylor, basically.
Right.
Okay, yeah, the guy's sound. He's good. He can have.
Kyle, he is remembered 18 years ago for that gimmick. I just wanted to give you a little bit of a flashback there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And what's he remembered for? Not being a great worker. He's remembered for having a stupid haircut. Just like Bill Buckner isn't remembered for being a 290
right.
hitter for his career. He's remembered for
right.
a ball go through his legs. You idiot, Al Snow. You moron. Okay?
If I get Al Snow booked, I'm so bringing you in
because
for
because
that.
I'm sure he has remembered that every day of the rest of his life, much like I have. But anyway.
You've just redoubled my determination to get Al Snow booked.
Okay. But, well, yes, he's a good... I mean, what's my reaction? I mean, do you want me to mock people that think Tracy Smothers is one of the top workers of the 1990s?
Yeah. If that's what you disagree with, if you disagree with that point, I said to you off air a couple days ago, I did think he would have been a better choice than the execrable Justin Credible character as ECW champion towards the end. And Pete Polanco, by the way, it's nothing personal against him.
Neither would have been a good choice.
Polanco was not a horrible worker. He was just in way over his head in how they had it booked. And
plus, he used to be Aldo Montoya.
Yeah.
Yeah, Paul Heyman, like, he was so determined. Like, you know what it was? It was almost like Bill Belichick. To bring this up right. to the NFL. Like, you know, Bill Belichick, I'm going to show the world that Albert Haynesworth right. was not a bad seed.
Right.
This man is going to succeed with me. Right. And just like Heyman, he's like, you know what? This guy was Aldo Montoya. Everyone knows he was Aldo Montoya. At least my fan base does. Everyone knows that stunk. And I'm going to show everybody the world that I can make a guy who was given a terrible gimmick a star. And you could not get the stink of that off. And
it was a horrible character, too. He was just a generic, bald, self-centered heel. It was a horrible, horrible character.
It wasn't a horrible character.
I thought it was
the
horrible.
The name was stupid, first
the name
of all.
Was stupid. The
just
name
incredible. Oh, I get it. That was, but it was.
He was a generic, arrogant heel.
I don't, for a while, when he had that stable of people behind him, it was okay.
And he wore jorts, which I understand was a little more fashionable.
Yeah, Steve Austin,
time.
I mean, wore jorts. You know,
yeah,
Johnson,
I mean,
top guys have worn jorts before. I mean, but it's hampered them. But to me, he had a ceiling to him
yeah.
where. He could be a top mid-card heel.
Upper mid-card in ECW was his ceiling.
Yes. Like, he never would have succeeded, as you saw in the WWE.
Versus Smothers, properly positioned, the Southern Stretcher, whatever.
No.
You don't
no,
think so?
No.
You don't think he could have been?
No.
I'm not saying they would have set buy rate records. Better than Justin Credible, at least,
yes.
in that role? Okay.
I mean,
right. You've given me that much.
Tracy Smothers, when he goes out there, in this sense, he's a very good worker. In the sense that he's not going to give you a bad match. Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to you kind of have to suck to have a bad match with Tracy Smothers,
right.
which I guess does lend some credence to the point that these people are probably trying to make.
They're saying that his matches, if you look at his individual matches during the 90s, each one of them was so great that it should put him on this list. That's what they're saying.
Here's my thing with Tracy Smothers. I don't think he had any great matches. Well, he had the one, the Southern Boys Midnight Express.
Right.
He just had a lot of good. To me, I would rather someone, and again, it's not fair to him because he was never really put in a position to have a great match. But, I mean, I guess, you know, to the point, there's a tag match that I'm thinking of. Give me a second. I can come up with this. There was a tag match and a clash. Pillman was involved. You know who his partner was? It's Terry Taylor. They took on Brian Pillman and Marcus Bagwell.
Okay.
It was either Clash 17 or 18.
That's frightening that you remember that, but kudos to you.
I want to say it was 17.
Okay.
But I could be wrong. Could have been 18. It was one of those two. I know that because I have...
We won't deduct points for you.
I have them on the same tape. That's why, I'm convinced it's one of those two. And that, I guess, to me, speaks somewhat to Tracy Smothers because it was a nothing match, basically. Believe it or not, here's the great irony. Reason number 720,000B why WCW went out of business. The match was designed to put over Marcus Bagwell.
Oh.
Okay, well, you've got Terry Taylor, Brian Pillman, and Tracy Smothers in there.
Oh, my God.
I guess I've kind of talked myself into the hipster point of view here, almost.
But not top 10, though. You wouldn't put him top 10.
No.
I mean, that's, so you're not siding with the hipsters on that. To a certain extent, and by the way, before I move off of the Tracy Smothers point here, the whole thing about he had his one epic match as that Bash match in 1990, let me tell you something. Lane and Eaton, circa 1990, Rick Morris, Kyle Ross on the other side of the ring could get four snowflakes out of them.
They went out in a blaze of glory, baby.
Yeah.
I mean, they were having good matches with everybody in 1990.
Yeah.
And you're right. It was nothing when you watch that match. You do not come away saying, oh, my God, Tracy Smothers.
Right.
They should have broke the Southern Boys up and gave this guy a run at the U.S. title.
Right.
That's my point about Tracy Smothers. He never stood out.
No, he didn't. You know, so as far as it goes.
I mean, even a guy like Chris Benoit, who for years, you know, once again, we shouldn't make light of it. But he was a guy who was mired in mediocrity for a long time, meaningless. He rose above.
Right.
You know, everyone said, okay, Chris Benoit's really good. He deserves better. Guess what? He got better.
Yeah.
Most people that are top workers do get a chance. For me, Tracy Smothers, good worker, not great worker. And to me, top 10 of a decade implies you are a great worker.
Although I'm guessing that the guy in the locker room who advised him and said, you know, Chris, take that rage and bury it in a deep, dark place,
probably not feeling good
about that.
Yes.
But as far as it goes, though, with the Southern Boys, all right? get back to me when you and the Master Blasters are going M-O-T-Y-C, O-M-G,
and
trademark
I
Rick
mean,
Morris.
I mean, the Southern boy, I mean, only in WCW could guys come out wearing Confederate flags and be expected to be cheered out of the video.
They knew their audience.
Yeah, other than that, what did they do that was that awesome? They never.
No,
to your
nothing.
Point, what you just said earlier about Midnight Express.
Right.
It was, that match had a formula to it.
Right.
And they nailed, what makes that match great was not any of the individual performers.
Right.
But that it was a formula, and they nailed it to perfection. There was a lot of old school Southern tag spots in there. You know, like the old partner switcheroo towards the end, which draw, you know, I mean, if you watch, I love that part of the match. I mean, this is real nerdy stuff. But, like, I mean, towards the end, when they roll out of the ring and do the switching of partners.
Yeah.
And JR's like, my God, my God, my God, it's Armstrong, and they think it's Smothers. And the crowd's going crazy. Like, that's awesome. Like, they just were on fire, but it wasn't any of the individual workers.
As far as it goes, too, with hipster takes on stuff, you and I talked about
this. This was obviously excluding Japan, this list.
Well, it was. It was U.S.-based, U.S. promotions.
Okay.
This is a different topic, but I see this as being a continuum as far as the thought process.
Owen Hart is 20 times better than Tracy Smothers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, but that's... Now
I would put Owen number four, as a matter of fact. There's your number four guy. Owen Hart is clearly number four. Tell me I'm wrong.
Did he have enough... Your formula seems to be here almost like work rate times box office success. You seem to be.
Well, Hart wasn't a huge box office draw.
No,
he had a couple of main events.
That's true. But it doesn't obviously hurt you that he didn't become. He didn't crack the glass ceiling until Royal Rumble '94. That's not bothering your ranking that for the first 4 years of the decade he wasn't really on the radar in terms of important matches, high energy and whatnot.
No.
Okay.
It doesn't. I mean, he was a good worker, though, before
that. Oh, he was. He always was.
Saddled with baggy pants and a stupid gimmick, yes. But, I mean, he had great matches with Jushin Liger before he blew out his knee.
Right, right.
You know? And, I mean, the Blue Blades, he had good matches for that time period as that.
He did.
But what are his two best matches? I mean, it's obviously the two with Bret in 94.
They were, and to a certain extent, you go to the whole thing of dance partner. And although I would say the same thing for Bret. It's pretty hard to have a bad match with Owen Hart, too.
Yeah,
you could say
that
for both of them.
Like, Owen, like, again.
Can we track points from both of them for working with great workers?
No, to the thing where they said about Tracy Smothers. Owen Hart had a lot of great, unimportant matches that were better than Tracy Smothers'
unimportant matches. I agree completely.
Like, Owen Hart would have throwaway matches on some of these pay-per-views when they didn't care about him at all.
Right.
That were very... He had a match... I remember he carried Savio Vega to a pretty decent match.
Right.
The opener of the SummerSlam in Cleveland.
Right.
96. He, you know, with a very green edge.
Right.
There was a pay-per-view in 98. It was one of those dumb ones that they never used the name again. Breakdown or something like that.
Something like that.
It was in Canada. That was like, you know, he could do those things. And Tracy Smothers never got to that level. I mean, you know, Tracy Smothers could always have a 3-star match, but
right.
He didn't have a lot of 4-star matches. And that's what separates great from good.
Off the top of my head, I see nothing that would move, and nobody that would move past Owen Hart. Although, again, Ric Flair still had some great matches in the 90s.
Yeah.
Big Van Vader, so.
Oh, you know who might be better than Owen Hart?
Who?
Mick Foley.
Mick
no
Foley?
One, no one, people don't, when you talk about snowflakes, I mean, this guy, you know, again, he took a lot of what he was given
and
made it better. I could put him at number four because there were matches where that were not heavily pushed necessarily on television that he was put in and made better. That's the key of a great worker.
Let me ask you this. Does this make me a hipster for putting this guy towards the top of a hypothetical list like that? He's a real darling of these Smart Mark boards here. If I were to say... Now, actually, you know what? And he didn't work long enough into the 90s, so he wouldn't make it. But he did come back later in the 90s. Barry Windham. Barry Windham is a huge guy on these boards.
Well, he was just a huge guy by the end of the 90s.
He was indeed.
I will say this. The first 2 years, 90 and 91, he was still very good. But Barry Windham was one of the top workers of the 80s.
His 1988 in particular.
He was fringe top 10 of the 80s.
Yeah.
He
was awesome.
But, I mean, well, even in 92 when he was doing tag stuff with Dustin Rhodes.
That
still,
great era.
He was still
early
pretty good.
92
but he got
WCW.
Injured, and he was a great heel.
Yeah.
in early 93 when, like, when that company was drawing nothing.
Yeah.
And they put the NWA World title on him, if you remember.
Yeah.
And then he blew out his knee, and he was never the same. He just got fat from there.
I still think they should have done the title change for him with the NWA title to Arn Anderson. You and I have argued about this. Arn Anderson could have been bigger than he was. Arn Anderson, I think. I would have put him over Ron Simmons. Ron Simmons was arguably like the number five baby face in the company in the summer of 92. And
Arn Anderson wasn't black, though.
True.
And Bill Simmons. Bill Watts.
Freudian slip. Yes,
yeah, Bill Watts wanted to recreate the old JYD magic. They could have done that a lot better.
And
by the way, the angle where they did do it, if you go back and watch that, the vacuum is very good. When they drew the number out of the hat and he won it, the crowd pops. You know, it was a papered crowd, I think.
But a number out of a hat, as opposed to he won a match or he won a battle royal or he did something.
Yeah, but it was so impromptu. If you remember, I liked that episode. I thought it was
horrible. I thought it was just like exposing the business. I thought it was horrible. That by like a stroke of luck, like he got the right scratch off ticket that day, so
he was getting a world title shot. It was supposed to be a big upset over Vader. Now,
yeah, it was.
I thought the whole thing with Vader having been put over so dominantly 2 months earlier and then losing the belt right away was stupid.
Right. And here's the thing about Watts. I don't know Watts personally.
Yeah, the whole Roberts Sting angle.
Yeah.
I mean, people forget that was like the big impetus for the Simmons title win.
It was.
When Roberts debuted, and that was a hot angle.
Right.
When Roberts came out of the crowd and DDT'd Sting. That was
right.
A hot angle.
I don't know enough about Watts to believe that he's a racist, and I'm like the last guy in the world to want to try to hang that on people. I grew up in Parma, Ohio, so I know what it's like that people throw that word around. So I don't like to sit here and say Bill Watts. However, something that's not a very good sign in his favor or disfavor on whether or not he's a racist, we're going to try and recreate JYD with Ron Simmons. Boy, if that doesn't smack of they all look alike, because JYD, charisma for days, not a great worker. Ron Simmons could work pretty well, but did not. He had heel charisma, but Ron Simmons didn't have the charisma to be the smiling babyface champion
like they
tried to make him.
No, he didn't. Now, I will say this. They had tried pushing him before Watts. He main evented that Halloween Havoc.
They did.
A dog Halloween Havoc 91 show.
As we've talked about before, he did nothing for the intervening 8 months. Try and find an important match he had, say, with a Dangerous Alliance member during that hot feud.
He
did nothing.
He was on a six-man tag on a club, but he wasn't a featured top guy.
On the depth chart of babyfaces, certainly behind Sting, certainly behind Wyndham, Steamboat.
Yep.
I'd argue Koloff and Rhodes.
Yeah,
he might have been fifth or sixth.
He wasn't on that War Games team.
He wasn't.
Keep in mind, to your point, that was kind of like the five top babyfaces they wanted.
If he was one of the five top babyfaces,
he wouldn't have been in there. Yeah, I mean, he could have taken at least
the Koloff. 3 months later, he's the world champion. Yeah, I don't get that.
He was not executed well.
No,
it
wasn't.
How did we get to this point?
Well, because Arn Anderson, because I know you think I'm a hipster for saying
Arn Anderson, by the way, is better than a lot of people. Who's better, Arn Anderson or Owen Hart?
Rest in peace, Owen, but I'm going to say Arn Anderson. I'm going to say double A.
I think Owen Hart is.
You think so? Okay.
I think he has a higher ceiling. Arn, again, is the classic. Like, name me a great Arn Anderson singles match. What is the best Arn Anderson singles match you've ever seen?
That's where it would be really hard.
Here's the thing. He was never put in a lot of positions, to his credit, to have a great singles match. He had a lot of great tag team matches.
I know him and Flair felt like their match was a letdown, but it had a lot of emotion.
I liked that match.
That match had emotion for days.
Yeah, I liked that a lot.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, the live crowd certainly liked a lot more than that stupid War Games match with Hogan.
Yeah.
That was the real draw of that Fall Brawl show.
Most of his great matches were tags. That's what I'll have to give you.
That was honestly his highlight of his soul, was beating Flair in that match. I thought, like, as far as, probably wasn't his best one-on-one match, but it was certainly, I thought, the highest he ever was as a solo wrestler.
It probably was. Well, a guy, if you look in particular in 1992 in that roster of guys there, this is another thing here, on who a lot of the hipsters really like and who a lot of the hipsters say is one of the great overlooked wrestlers of the 90s, Dustin Rhodes, that what Dustin Rhodes was grinding out in 92 into 93, that in a company that didn't have guys that were consistently performing a lot of times night to night, he would go out there, he would do it, he would work inventively, and that basically he gets a bad rap A, for being son of Dusty, that it looks like that it was paternal favor as far as him getting a push, and B, because Dusty wasn't a great worker in the classic sense. Oh, how great could Dustin have been? But Dustin being very overlooked, that's a big hipster point I'm seeing from these hipster boards.
How many times can you say hipster there?
Yeah, all day long.
Yes. I'm shocked by that opinion, how quickly things turn, because I'm old enough to remember the prevailing school of thought on Dustin Rhodes that existed, you know, live and in living color in 1991 and 93. He was considered very overrated at the time. Everyone, you talk about the, you know,
right,
the nepotism. That was from, he was, I'm shocked by that opinion.
Okay.
Dustin Rhodes, to me, again, properly rated, I'm going to say.
Okay.
These hipsters that you're speaking
right,
of have him overrated, and I think that at the time we were being a little too critical. See, that
okay,
I think it's retroactive trying to undo some of the criticism. He was better. He deserved better than saying, Dusty's just trying to push his brat kid. But he, to call him great, he was being hidden. Like, all of his good matches, he was hidden in tag.
Right.
Like, for instance, that great match, Clash 17, you go back to that.
Yeah.
You know, it was that great angle with Steamboat's return.
Yep.
You know, he was basically being hidden.
He was great in the tags.
He was good in that. And with Wyndham, he was being hidden.
Yeah.
He could come in. He could do the flip-flop and fly, some other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he did. What's interesting is by the time that Hogan showed up.
Right.
He actually was pretty good. He actually, at that point, was probably legitimately underrated. He had a very good match in a clash with Vader. That at the time no one gave a damn about.
Right.
But kind of like now, it's kind of one of those lost classics on these boards, you know, people talk about. And if you do watch it, now it's not a great match.
Right.
I mean, if you just like to go back and watch like a 3 3/4, I mean, this is real smart mark. I mean, if you like to go back and that 3 3/4 star format star
right,
match that, you know, maybe you haven't seen before, yet you ain't seen in 10 years, go watch that match. It's very good. I mean, Vader gives Dustin a lot of offense. And that was the dying days of his WCW career. But, I mean, when he was Goldust, obviously that's going to hamper his in-ring work, obviously.
Well, Goldust, even, that's an area where I'm seeing on a lot of these boards people are saying, you know, if you look at the Goldust stuff again and everything like that, which, by the way, the one point where I do agree with, one of the great tag teams the early part of the last decade was Bookdust. They were doing some great stuff together.
Yeah, but it wasn't like great in-ring work. It was more... It was a bizarre.
They had good matches, though. I think they had some pretty good matches.
Well, yeah, because it was one of those teams where you can have Dustin basically do the play Ricky Morton, and Booker gets the hot tag.
Yeah,
they
played
worked
their roles very well.
Yeah, but it was one of those, like, to me, it was great by accident, which
isn't
to criticize
it.
It's one of those things. Remember they were doing that like dumb like movie critique.
Yeah,
and like it was like everyone's like, wasn't she kind of.
Right.
Like, you know, like not like Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler laughing to make you think it's funny,
right,
but it was legitimately funny.
Right.
And it kind of went from there. But he never had, like, what was his best match in WWE? Goldust, Dustin Rhodes, you know, Dustin Runnels, you know.
I think they're looking
the
at
the artist formerly known as Goldust. I mean, he didn't have.
The Piper match at Mania, I mean, it was gimmicked half to death, but that was.
Oh, come on.
That was not bad. It had its moments. Yeah, I mean,
the OJ car chase? That was stupid. That was a dumb match.
All right. How about any of the Razor Ramon matches?
Those stunk. Not only were those not good, those were awful matches. Razor Ramon, like, didn't even want to be there. Okay?
Yeah,
if you look at Razor Ramon, I think if you look, he had his 5 spot out to, you know, get the first shot at first Jack and Coke, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
He couldn't wait to get out of there.
Yeah, that's true. It had to do with his own sense of homophobia and not wanting
that's
to work with
funny,
him also.
By the way.
Yeah.
Like, that's stuff, like, there's no way that would ever happen today.
Not true.
Can you imagine, I mean, granted the business is so different than it was in 96, but can
right,
you imagine a guy, I don't want to wrestle this gay character because
right,
my son's going to be embarrassed that I'm being beaten by a gay character. I'm like, really? Like, that, to me, that just seems, I think he used that as a crutch because he wanted out.
It probably was.
I don't believe
it
that.
It probably was.
Shame on you,
but
Scott.
But as far as Dustin Rhodes, before I move on to anybody else.
He's properly rated.
Okay. Well, one of the things here, and we're getting real postmodern real quickly on this whole thing about, you know, revisionism and everything like that. One of the things I'm seeing on, I think it was on Pro Wrestling Only, on this thread about workers of the 90s, is that there are some TV matches, some real hidden classics between Dustin Rhodes and Bunkhouse Buck, that they had some really great stud stable era matches.
Again, that was close to the Hogan. That was right before the Hogan era.
Yeah.
Keeping score. And in two.
Right.
They had – those were pretty good.
Okay.
But they weren't awesome. They had a match – Spring Stampede is one that I think people – that's a great show.
Yeah.
Spring Stampede 94,
yeah.
Great show.
That's true.
And that they have a really good match that's kind of surprised. That's when Dustin was actually, like I said before, 94.
So you're saying he grew into being a very good worker by the end of his WCW run?
I thought that was his peak as a worker.
Okay.
Ironically, it was when he was probably being pushed the least at any point in his career.
Oh, sure. With Hogan coming in and
everything
on the way.
Yeah, if you're an old-school WCW babyface, hit the bricks, buddy, man.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, hey, I got to make room for Jim Duggan and Ed Leslie, okay?
Well, you were mentioning about...
What an ass.
I agree with that. And don't forget the Honky Tonk Man and everybody else that came in as a part of that. You mentioned before about his match with Vader. Some of the hipsters on these boards will tell you that his matches with Vader, although they got maybe 1/100th the push of the Vader-Sting matches, were as good as anything Vader and Sting ever did together, save perhaps White Castle of Fear. Take that out of the mix, and any other Vader-Sting match is not as good as, or at least is no better than a Vader-Dustin Rhodes
match. I could name three Vader-Sting matches off the top of my head better than that match.
Would that include the first pay-per-view one?
The Great American Bash, the title change, and Starrcade 92.
Okay. King of Cable.
Okay. What a dumb the King of Cable. who came? Oh, I mean, what a dumb company. Yeah, those three are demonstrably better than the Vader-Dustin Rhodes match. Now, Grant, again, it goes into...
All right.
I'm not really separating the fact that all three of those matches were put in a spot where they should have been better. Vader,
sure.
Dustin Rhodes was essentially a throwaway TV match on the Clash.
And there's
but
a ceiling.
Sting,
yeah.
But Sting Vader, that right. King of Cable match,
right.
was not a match that I think your average wrestling fan remembers. Oh, remember with Sting and Vader? You know, had this great match at Starrcade 92?
Right. Yeah.
Okay, 20 people ordered that show, Ricky.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, not a lot of people remember it. Obviously, the world title change, that was a big deal. The White Castle Fear had a really stupid build up to it, but it was a strap match, and under those bad strap match rules,
right.
where you had to drag and you got to corner, you can't do any better.
Right.
But, you know, that was kind of a throwaway match at King of. It was basically. They were basically directionless. I mean, both guys, when you think about it, that should have been your world title match at Starrcade
92. Well, it was a way to get Sting a win back against Vader without sidetracking Vader from the world title picture. They didn't want to put the belt back on Sting, but Sting had to get his win back from the Great American Bash. That's what that was.
Like I said, a throwaway match.
Yeah, it was.
It was a throwaway match. It was a match that they could have basically gone paint by numbers.
Right.
And they didn't.
That was a save face for one of your top baby faces match.
Sting and Vader did have some paint-by-numbers matches, even in 94, like a Slamboree, which is a show I love. Okay,
yeah.
You want me to go hipster to Slamboree 94. I love that show.
Okay.
That was kind of a paint-by-numbers throwaway Sting match, and it was just as good as the Vader does.
And it was,
match.
It was a last-minute substitution after Rick Rude's back injury in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you had that. Well, another take, and this is going to go back. You won't even remember this conversation. You and I were talking about this, I remember, last winter.
I love when people always say, there's no way you're going to remember this, and they're always right.
Yeah, I know I'm right about this. Because when you and I, there was one night that I was over your place, and we both had our laptops out, and we were actually looking at hipster things. I think it was on Death Valley Driver. And the one thing that stood out in my mind, because they were breaking down best tag teams of the last decade, and I said to you at the time, I said, hey, Kyle, how about this? There is a guy here who is saying greatest tag team of the last decade, the Briscoe brothers, and you just let out this huge belly laugh. You know, well, what kind of a hipster, you know, would say that somebody on the ROH stage could be that? And here's what's interesting to me, because I remember when you were doing the old SNS show in 06, and you were saying wrestler of the year, I think you gave it to Edge narrowly over Bryan Danielson, but you had them like neck and neck there. So essentially, if I'm reading that correctly,
you're going to try to trap me, aren't you? Somewhere?
No. I mean, I'm going to set up a logical construct for you here, and you can disagree with it and tell me you have no construct. But the construct
I see
is you're willing to say that for somebody for 1 year. You're willing to put somebody top of the heap for 1 year, but over the course of a decade, you've got to be on a stage where you can draw. Is that your opinion? And that if somebody's going to say Briscoe Brothers and disregard the fact that what would be the peak that they ever packed in an arena? $2,000? I mean, something in that ballpark. Never drew more than that. And as a tag team, no less. Well, actually, we're saying best tag team. It's not fair to say they weren't a bigger draw than that. But anyways, as far as it goes, you seem to be saying that it's a hipster opinion to say that somebody in the number one indie in the country can be the greatest of a decade, but you'll apparently say it for a year because a year is not too far outside the bounds in your imagination, apparently. Is that about right?
Let's use a sports analogy.
Okay.
Here. To be the MVP of a league and be on a losing team,
Andre Dawson, 87.
You have to have a phenomenal campaign. You really have to demonstrate that you are the man.
And that was Danielson, 06.
Okay.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. It's because here's the thing. If you're that... I love the Briscoe brothers. They're
right.
A fine tag team.
Right.
If you want me to sign a petition that says they should be in the WWE right now doing their thing...
Right.
Give me a pen, man.
Okay.
Okay, they do. They are better right now than any team in the WWE.
Right. That's the taller than Mickey Rooney club also.
Yes. But to me you have to perform at a ridiculous level if you're at the smaller stage.
Okay.
Much like an MVP of a losing team to beat out somebody who's on the winning team, who's in the big company. Now, I laughed at it mainly just because of the source, and
yeah.
You know, and it's like, you know, I just imagine the kind of person who would say it. It's
yeah.
Not, believe it or not, a terrible argument.
Okay.
They're in the contention, mainly because, well, first of all, tag
not
team
a lot of
wrestling.
Contenders, yeah,
tag team wrestling, for but to say the Briscoe brothers are better than Edge and Christian is silly.
They had a longer run than any of the other top contenders we would put up there.
Yeah, and
Edge and Christian,
which helps them.
Parties were on
they
and
did,
off.
Yeah,
Eminem.
Yeah, they did.
London and Kendrick. They had a longer run, continuous.
Yeah, and that is huge. And they did perform at a very high level.
Yeah.
At the lesser stage for a long time. That does help them. I'll believe it or not, as much as I laughed, and I believe it or not, I actually do remember that happening.
This
whole conversation.
All right. So for once, I was wrong. All right.
They are in the conversation. I actually would not...
On the periphery of the conversation.
I would not... Now, I would mock the people for saying that, just because I was mocking the people, not necessarily their opinion.
You're mocking their appearance, more or less.
Well, but it's not an awful argument. I mean, it's not like something I'm going to kick and scream, how dare you think that.
Okay.
It's just indicative of something. Like, to me, it's kind of more of a fanboy opinion.
All right.
That they're saying that they want the Briscoe... You know, it's like... It's like a hipster with an indie rock album. They
right.
just want to shout their favorite indie rock album the loudest because they want it to be recognized.
Okay.
Now, the Briscoe brothers are very deserving of high praise.
Right.
But I don't, to me, I just kind of, when somebody like says that, it's kind of funny.
And that's a thing where, so you're picturing somebody, you know, basically going all comic book guy on somebody. You think Air Boom is the best tag team in the world?
Yeah.
I beg to differ. Is that what you're
yes,
basically saying?
Yes, yes, yes.
Right.
It's like, yeah, don't think,
right.
it's the buddy, your shit does stink, okay?
Well, as far as it goes, then. Well, this is very interesting because I'm gonna hone back.
Hey, ROH is the organization that worked Jake Dickman, by the way.
Great, greatest thing of all time. You know what? Let's reset that in a second here. But what I want to get to on this is very interesting because when you were doing SNS a couple of years ago, all the webcasts with that, all throughout 2006, just a shade on either side, a little 05, a little 07, but it was basically a 2006 dominated show. This is very interesting, and again, I am the guy who has listened to so much of that back then and then now and continuing to mine ideas for doing stuff with you as I'm doing this here, but what you said about Bryan Danielson, I'm seeing it in a new light because I just took it for granted that in any year you would take a guy who whatever, but you're honing in, you're saying he really was Andre Dawson with the Cubs in 87 with the MVP season. You're saying that year that he had was so special that's why he in ROH could be considered possibly Wrestler of the Year. That it's not just any indie wrestler having a great year somewhere, but that he was having like a historic great year for an indie guy.
Yes.
Okay.
It's not only that. That's only half the equation.
Okay.
Let's talk about the year that you're talking about, 2006.
And what a horrible
year
it was.
The WWE sucked balls. I don't know if I can say these things. I know you're trying to go to more professional mediums. But if anything deserves to say it sucked balls, it's 2006 World Wrestling Entertainment.
That will not be edited, by the way.
There were hardly any good matches.
That's true.
That year. I mean, it was awful. The direction was bad. And that's what enabled, you know, you talk about the time period, late 05, early 07.
Yeah.
That was sort of... TNA was still good at that point. Let's talk about things.
Before Russo came in again.
Okay. That was, to me, the period where you could make the argument, and see, this kind of makes my earlier opinion, that Ring of Honor, I certainly did, and granted, I'm a little, you know, different than your average wrestling fan, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
You could make the argument that it was better if you were a true wrestling fan, you know, that it was a better product than the WWE during
Clearly.
That time period. Okay,
in terms of
not just for, yeah,
not even close.
Now some people will disagree. I mean, people like there's some people that will never get over
people
the fact
like
that you
bad
put
wrestling.
Over that people. Well, no, not there. There are people that you put a ring and you're like, this just does not. What Vince did, Vince's biggest thing is he upped the standard. What people expect pro wrestling to look like,
the lighting,
and you can laugh at that. But look, hey, you know, I say people roll my eyes when I say Cam Newton looks like a star.
Okay.
It's the same thing. And there are people who will never get over the fact that you look at Ring of Honor, it looks like it's a couple, you know, short guys wrestling in a high school gym.
Okay.
Okay. I'm not one of those people. But it was a combination to Ring of Honor, that was clearly its best period.
Okay.
It was probably the WWE's weakest period. Now, to my earlier point, how it took Ring of Honor to be phenomenal and the WWE to be pretty darn bad for Ring of Honor to be considered better.
Okay.
It was not that way, the balance. Ring of Honor, over the course of the decade, is not better than the WWE. Do they have... Now, they're very much now two different products.
Right.
But, you know, Ring of Honor, you are going to get consistently top to bottom better match. You're just going to get... If you just want to watch good matches, I guess, per se, in the classic snowflake sense, Ring of Honor is better.
Right.
But you're not... The emotional investment really isn't there.
Right.
You know, they did hit some home runs. You know, the ROH, CZW, I went to some of those shows.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal. I mean, that angle was just as good as almost anything WWE did.
Right.
But to me, a great WWE match will always be the best match.
Yep.
In any era.
Yeah.
Well, Meltzer always talks about this. If you have a great match, not a phenomenal, out-of-this-world John Cena, CM Punk kind of match, where one for the ages, but a great match, 4.5-star match, at WrestleMania, it's remembered forever, and it's kind of bumped up.
Right.
You know, like, how many times has the best match of WrestleMania been nominated Match of the Year just because it is the best match at WrestleMania?
Right.
Okay, now granted, WWE puts a little more into that show than the other ones. So,
right.
But, you know, like a Triple H Undertaker, for instance, is all, even though the fact that in the grand scheme of things, it's probably not one of the 50 best matches of the last 10 years. Maybe it is.
Right.
Maybe it is. But it happened at WrestleMania.
Right.
And so people are always going to remember it.
I'd like to think that the hipsters could see your point and agree with it. I'd like to think
if they don't, then they're stupid.
I'd like to think that the proverbial Matchy McSnowflakerson out there could understand your point and agree with it. It's interesting, too, when you were talking about things being better in the WWE that year, I remember you saying that LAX was the best tag team
in ROH.
Year.
Yeah, the LAX was the best tag team that year. LAX was phenomenal that year. There was a period, I remember, they were outstanding. I thought... There was a time period when I would watch these acts, and it's funny when they don't make it to the big time, people always like kind of turn around, you know, to my earlier point where and they're like, LAX, you thought they should have been awesome. Are you kidding me? What are they doing now?
Woodward was saying then.
Well, to me, wrestling is about capturing lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
And that was an act that was so hot at the time. If you would have taken them to the big time, I think it could have been. Now, again, it presumes that you're going to do things that WWE wouldn't let them. I mean, you could have Conan go off the handle and make some probably insidious remarks. You know, Eddie Guerrero's blood is on your hands, Vince McMahon. Things that they would not do, okay, that would really be pushed in the envelope. And that's just an example of something I came up. You know, I mean, I obviously some people would probably want to bring up Max Moon, but he'd probably lose the entire audience, okay? But you know what I'm saying? Like, to me, and they were, you know, Homicide's a little fella, obviously, you know? So, you know, you're going to get into the fact that absolutely no one would sell for him.
Yeah, but you'd be lucky if they didn't put him in a Hornswoggle costume.
Yeah. But to me, that was, I mean, you can't, Jim Cornette always said, if it works in front of 1,000 people, it'll work in front of 10,000 people. And that was lightning in a bottle, and TNA blew it, so, I mean, WWE has certainly blown it.
You and I both have...
That was the best team of 2006, by the way, LAX.
They were. And that's where, again, this is fun for anybody that listened to the show back in the time to be able to put this in the historical perspective now, because you were saying things in the moment there. It's really interesting now to revisit it and have you kind of place it in the perspective of where it was at.
Obviously now, me, like, you know, extolling the virtues of LAX in 2011, like... Really? That was, wow. You can have that lightning in a bottle type, you know, moment. There are other examples of, you know, when guys were great. Especially, how many times could you find guys over, particularly the last 6 years in WWE, that you're like, oh man, this guy was so awesome for those 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, full disclosure, I thought Mr. Kennedy was great in WWE. I thought they always dropped the ball with him.
I never thought he was a great worker, but
I thought he could have been great under their environment. I thought he could have been a legit main event. I thought that he was a guy that, because Randy Orton didn't like him and because he, you know, kind of made some foolish statements about steroids and then, you know, whatever, and then he got busted, that he kind of screwed himself. I thought that he was a guy that if you put him, once again, captured lightning in a bottle with him,
right,
he could have been great. He could have been a champion in that organization.
Yeah, I can.
I remember when he came back to Raw one time and cut this. He came out and the people were cheering for him like Matt, and he got him to turn against him.
Yeah.
That's a special skill. Because what did I talk about last time we were on this program? How people don't give a damn what these characters come out and do. We like them. We don't like them. We don't care what
you
tell
them. It goes to booking. A lot of times it's how they're booked.
Yeah, but he was good enough to actually turn that crowd. That's impressive.
That is. That's a very hard thing to do. The comeback pop is something that's hard to overcome if you're a heel.
Yeah, Shelton Benjamin is a guy who, you know, when you watch that period of 2005, oh, man, this guy should be so great. And he, you know, there's a lot of those things. It's like, okay, yeah, after the fact, oh, you never really became anything. You're a real idiot for hyping that up. Well, yeah, but there's
very
some things to consider. Yeah,
yeah,
he was under. Now, again, getting back to some of the earlier points, was he ever going to, you know, carry the? No, I didn't see him as like a guy who carried a company. But
some of our talents would care as much about their work in the ring as they would playing video games. My God,
yeah, you know. But to me, he's more. You know, it's funny, and I think a lot of these people on these boards are going to would completely disagree with what I'm about to say, but they're wrong. Shelton Benjamin is much more underrated than Tracy Smothers.
Okay. I would agree with that. I would agree.
Or he certainly had a higher ceiling.
Well, for a guy who, you go back to the very beginning, before he got called up, this is a guy who was regarded, prior to his call-up, as being on a par with Brock Lesnar. They were the Minnesota Stretching Crew. How does a guy who is viewed as being at least roughly on a par, presumably, with the next big thing, to being one of the most underutilized guys of the decade? It just is it's,
you know,
an incredible stretch of bad luck.
I do think there was something, maybe a lack of fire in there. I mean, I'm not going to totally defend the company.
But I'm an athleticism guy, and that guy could freaking do things.
And what's funny is I watched a round table one time, one of the JR round tables, and they were, like, hyping him, like, after he was, like, pretty much done and buried with the company, like, oh, Shelton Benjamin, this guy should have been so great. And they were all agreeing. Like, they were all like, yeah, like, why wasn't he awesome? And I'm like, who is to blame for this? Well, I mean, there were so many stop and start pushes that I think it was tough for guys to get. Like, after a while, it's like, look, I'm never going to be a consistent main eventer. So,
yeah,
you know.
He might have lost heart along the way, but, I mean, I'll blame it on booking a lot because I just see him where. You know, it's easy to do that. It's easy to fall into the trap of if I had the pencil. But, I mean, if I had the pencil, I think I could get that guy over, and it wouldn't be that hard.
He was over. He was. I mean, remember when he beat Triple H? He was over like crazy.
Yeah, well, it's start and stop push. Yeah. I mean, that never went anywhere.
Yeah, well, it did for a little bit, but then they jobbed him. It was one of those deals where he looked like a very logical guy to win the Intercontinental title from Randy Orton.
Right.
And I remember this was.
But Orton wasn't going to lose the IC title hardly to anybody at that point, really.
Yeah, this was 04, not 05, by the way.
He was on the verge of the big push.
Yeah, and, well, he did lose
the
Edge.
The brief push.
He lost it to a returning Edge, and that made no sense to me. To me, it was like Edge didn't need that belt. To me, that really hurt Benjamin. I'm thinking of the King of the Ring 04.
I think so, yeah. He should have been in that spot.
It was the pay-per-view where HBK and Triple H main event in a boring Hell in a Cell.
Yeah. He definitely should have been in that spot. There's no question about it. But you look at guys like that and the underutilization of it. Somebody that I pointed out to you beforehand, I'm pretty much running out of names here to throw out that the hipsters love. But I've seen this before, not just recently, but one of the hipsters at, I believe it was Pro Wrestling Only. And I say this affectionately. I like a lot of the content there. I read the stuff religiously. I'm being good-natured and calling them hipsters. But Buddy Rose, great underutilized worker. This guy, best worker in the world from 77 to 84. Nobody was doing better stuff than this guy. Buddy Rose.
Again, yes, he's good. No one's like, yes. Okay.
You got to see him in this 81 match in Portland against Roddy Piper. You know, the greatest match that nobody ever saw, you know.
To me, it's a lot what I call the race to the bottom with these hipsters in indie rock. They want to find, like, the most obscure band. And it's like, you'll listen, I'm like, oh, this is good. But it is not the greatest music of today.
Right.
Or it is not better than, you know, Nirvana. Okay.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Like, it's, okay, yes. Do you want me to say that, yes, this music that most people don't know about and will never know about is very good? Yes. Yes, it is. But to say it's the best or in contention for the best is laughable.
That's true.
That's a major problem I have with what you and I affectionately refer to as hipsters.
Right.
It's because something's so obscure and they know about how good it is and most people don't, that, oh, it goes from they take things that are underrated and make them overrated, basically.
That's true.
When, in fact, they're properly rated.
That's
you know,
true.
Buddy Rose, yes. Was he a good worker that was never in a huge, prominent role nationally?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Should he have been anything more ever than a good worker that was never in a prominent role nationally? No, he shouldn't have been.
Could he have been a better, more deserving, even short-term AWA world champion than some of the other guys who were around at that time?
Once again, you're dealing with some real incompetent management there. But no.
All right.
No. I guess you're really digging into the depths here. We're going to lose a lot of people when we go back into our mid-80s AWA timeline here.
But so you wouldn't have sliced off any of Rick Martel's 18 months to toss him a few.
No. I mean, would that, would Vern Gagne have been saying, oh, I showed you WWE taking Hulk Hogan from me. I've got Buddy Rose, not Rick Martel. I mean, really?
Okay.
I mean, really? Would that have done anything?
Okay.
I mean, okay, maybe, yeah, Rick Martel was a kind of a dumb. Here's the thing. See, that would have worked against Rose the same way it works against Martel. You could argue probably that Rick Martel is quote unquote underrated. Okay, he was a solid worker, right? But because he basically had an undeserving long AWA title reign, people think he kind of stinks more than he actually did.
He's getting top 10 run from some of the hipsters, top 10 worker of the 80s.
That's a little overdone.
Okay. I've even seen Tito Santana get some run for that. Maybe a little bit of sympathy there for being so horribly booked later in the book.
I'll buy into him.
Okay.
Tito was great. Tito had... I love the run he had in 86 with Savage on the house shows.
Right.
I mean, those were some great matches.
Right.
He had great matches. Santana had great matches with Valentine. And those were key drawing matches. Those were, I mean, they were main events on some, like the Intercontinental title. Those were main events on
they
some
were.
Of those cards.
They were.
So I can buy Santana as a fringe top 10 guy more than Martel, although they were partners and were pretty even in the strike. But
post-Strike Force breakup,
where see,
Strike
with
such force, post that,
he was pretty worthless.
He never did anything.
It was kind of funny. Did you know that both of those guys were politicking to do the heel turn on the other?
Really?
Yeah.
They definitely went the right way, because Martel did a good job, and I'm not sure Tito had the heel charisma in him.
I don't either. I can't imagine.
No.
It was because he never did it, obviously.
No.
It's tough for me to imagine him being a heel, but, I mean, the model Tito Santana, you know, I mean,
yeah.
I didn't really like the model Rick Martel either. I thought he was good as just heel Rick Martel.
Right.
If you want to talk about a real hipster opinion from yours truly.
Okay.
There was that real short window in 89 when he was not the model.
Okay.
SummerSlam 89, you can find an example of this.
All right.
It's a great six-man tag. Here's Kyle Ross's hipster recommendation of the week.
Okay.
The little fella knows that I love this match.
Mm-hmm.
Santana and the Rockers versus Martel and the Fabulous Rougeaus.
I remember you putting that over on one of the list of
lists.
Okay,
yeah. All right. Let me tell you something. This is a great match.
Okay.
Okay, great's overdoing it. It's very good. Again, it's kind of like, you know, I'm falling in my own trap there. It's first of all, it's six guys. Part of the reason it's awesome is because six guys in an 89 WWF ring, and
sure.
None of them stink, okay,
right.
Which is shocking enough.
Right.
But you watch that match and watch Rick Martel, not as the model, just as a heel Rick Martel.
Right.
Very solid performance. Now, again, not anything that was deserving of a world title reign.
Right.
Even an intercontinental title reign. At no
right.
point did I think Rick Martel as a heel deserved to run as a singles champion.
Right.
And I, when he became the model, he was always like, I don't know, just like doing too many model things. You know,
yeah.
he always would stop to like, you know, go like this or like do like some like pose, and it was like kind of annoying.
Yeah,
he had some dog matches. Rick Martel's the model.
I think he taught Maurice everything she knows about French Canadian overacting.
Yeah,
everything
know, yeah.
she's doing, she learned from watching
his
tapes.
Yes, you know, it's just like to me, it was a little just too much, you know, modeling.
Yeah, it probably was. Santana actually too. That. it strikes me as, you want to talk about underrated, maybe this is a hipster opinion, that sixth man at WrestleMania 3, for one of the guys in the ring being a cripple, that was a perfectly acceptable six-man tag, was it not?
I drew a lot of heat,
yeah.
And it was a great angle.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was not bad. I got one last thing I was going to ask you, see if this makes me a hipster or not. Somebody I think could have been utilized better in the 80s, maybe a little bit of Kurt Angle before his time. Brad Riggins as a stretcher. You think Brad is this historical revisionism to say I could go back to 1985 and have him as like a badass stretcher? Maybe it's not Kurt Angle 20 years earlier. Maybe it's Luthez 40 years later. But some type of stretcher type deal, because he was a real stretcher.
Riggins, Luthez is what you're trying to tell me,
or Kurt Angle, whichever you prefer.
Neither.
Danny
okay.
Hodge.
Yeah, you know who I prefer?
Who?
Luthez and Kurt Angle, okay? Brad Riggins, look, did he have some good credentials? Yeah. You know, a lot of guys have had good credentials.
All right.
He was boring. He was bland. He wasn't even as good as Tracy Smothers or Terry Taylor.
Yeah, a lot of people thought, as I've tagged them, the Canadian Voldemort was boring, but they made a virtue out of that in some ways, just like silent badass kind of thing.
He wasn't boring. When was he boring?
Not at the end, certainly.
Well,
but
was he boring? He was underfoot. There's a difference between being boring and being underpushed.
Yeah, that's true. By the way,
he was doing things that no one else. Brad Riggins didn't do anything that was spectacular. He was just technically sound.
By the way, one of the things here, and this is almost chilling. I was reading a match recap of a certain point here, of something that was written. I don't remember when this, but this was a match, I want to say like WCW in the late 90s or whatever, but there was some type of thing, I think like Benoit was doing like some type of neck bridge, and the reviewer was like, oh my God, he must have like the most incredible strength in his neck muscles. And I read that, and I'm like, oh my God, my blood ran cold. Like, you talk about, you don't know the half of it, pal.
Yeah,
oh
yeah,
my God,
yeah,
that was chilling. I mean,
it's tough. You know,
you don't know the context when you're going to read something like this, and then it's just, ooh, I bet he'd like to have those words back.